I'm John Krall. Today's No Limits is going to be a fun one. We're going to talk about who pays to put the players on the field, the balls on the court, the fans in the seats, and the logos on the uniforms. We're going to talk about the business of sports. We've got a great group of guests to discuss all of this. Indiana Sports Corporation President Allison Melancton, Indiana Fever star Tamika Catchings, and U.S. Sports Advisors President Ken Unger. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. I'm John Krall. You're listening to an encore presentation of No Limits. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We've got a fun one today. We are going to be talking about the business of sports. We've got a fabulous group of guests. I'd like to invite all of our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. They are Allison Melancton, who is the president of the Indiana Sports Corporation. Allison, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
This is actually the second time you've been on the show. The first time, though, we did a Super Bowl show, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that a little bit, but you were on the phone, so it's the first time we've actually had you here in the studio. Tamika Catchings, who is a legend with the Indiana Fever. Tamika, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
It's certainly good to have you here. And Ken Unger, who is the president of the U.S. Sports Advisors Corporation, a marketing firm. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
Well, I want to start first. Give us an idea. I mean, when we talk about the business of sports, I think we're aware that at least in our culture right now, sports are kind of omnipresent. I mean, that it's how big a force are they, say, just in the U.S. economy? Could I throw that one to you, Allison? I don't think we need precise, or Ken. Oh, they're pointing fingers. We're off to a promising start here. They're pointing fingers back and forth at each other. How about Ken? We'll start with you.
John, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and just sponsorship alone, for example, is a $2 billion a year industry. And so, sports is big business both here in the central Indiana area as well as in the country.
Well, Allison, how big is it for Indianapolis? How important is it?
Well, the Sports Corporation over the last 33 years has pumped over $4 billion into the economy. So for Indiana, sports has been a priority, and that's been fantastic for the Sports Corporation, and we feel like we contribute a lot to the state.
And could you explain a little bit what the Sports Corporation does?
Sure. The Indiana Sports Corporation was the first sports corporation incorporated in the entire country in 1979, and now there are 500 or more of them across the country. So it's an industry that was sort of born in Indiana, and we continue to lead in that area. What we do is go out and bid on sporting events, and then when we are successful in winning those bids, we bring the events back and execute and conduct them here.
Tamika Catchings, you have an entry because you're both a child of a professional athlete and a professional athlete yourself. So in some ways, it's been the only experience you have known all the way through your life. Was being a professional athlete something you aspired to from, early childhood? Or?
Yeah, when I was in seventh grade, that was the first time that I made the decision that I wanted to be a professional basketball player. And the WNBA wasn't around at that point in time. It was the NBA. So wanting to follow in my dad's footsteps, that was like the role that I was going to take and that I was determined to take.
And could you talk a little bit about the difference, when the WNBA was formed, what that meant to you and to a lot of other young women?
Yeah, opportunity. Having the opportunity to do something that I love to do, and I love to play basketball even to this day. And when I look at it, and as I go out and I speak and I talk about the WNBA, this year we're entering into our 17th season. So to look at the first years and it came my freshman year in college, and that was when my goal kind of shifted to no longer do I want to be in the WNBA or in the NBA, I want to be in the WNBA. And so, you know, having the opportunity for all these young ladies out here that have aspired to grow up and be professional women basketball players, now you have the opportunity right here in America, and specifically here in Indiana.
Well, let me take this in a slightly different direction. We've established, obviously, that sports are huge and a huge business right now. Why is that? What is it that drives people? I'll go back to Ken Unger on that one.
Sure. I think for business, for example, to be associated with sports, it's important because sports is a metaphor for being your best, for victory, for performance, for teamwork. All these things that businesses want to be associated with and want to be known for. So by the time you get through the college ranks to professional sports, there's a lot of interest in supporting professional sports from the business community because it's great to be affiliated with an industry like that. So over time, and it's been really the last 25 years, you've seen a massive influx of investment in sports and sports stadiums like the beautiful Lucas Oil Stadium that we have. You see investment in athletes and athlete training and athlete salaries so that it's a great career. It could be a career for a lifetime. So all these resources have been flooding to sports because of what it stands for. And so over time, as businesses get more value from it, as fans get more enjoyment from it, and as athletes can make a career of it, you've seen this industry really expand. You know, one of the anecdotes about the growth of it is when I started in sports, really people came from all different professions to have a career in sports. If you're not an athlete, and I wasn't blessed to be an athlete. Now there are 280 sports management programs in universities around the country, 280 programs. You know, churning out young men and women for a career just in sports business or in sports administration. I think that's really telling for the growth of the industry over time.
What we've seen a couple of milestones here. Ken, you just mentioned that it's a lot of the explosion has occurred in the past 25 years. Obviously, we've seen that really the growth of professional women's basketball just in the past 17 to be precise. Allison, what is it about that time that led to that kind of explosive growth?
Well, I think Title IX certainly and the timing of that legislation was important, and it really, as I look back, it was the jump starter for many women's programs to start. I was giggling when Ken was talking because I graduated from college in 1983, very long time ago, with one of the first programs in sports administration. And at the time I was looking at colleges, it was hard to find a place that you could go and get a degree in sports administration. So I'm thankful that I was one of the first folks through on that. But as Ken said, it's incredibly competitive. There's programs all across the country with students who apply at the Indiana Sports Corporation to work. And I'm shocked still at the number of sports management and sports administration degrees people are getting.
Is any of that also, and I should invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. How much of that is also the sort of the growth? I mean, ESPN is not that much older. The fact that there's been an explosion in the kind of media coverage of sports, and that, you know, to some degree probably comes fairly close to to covering the entirety of your career. Tamika, how big is ESPN's development in this whole sports media industry?
Well, ESPN has been huge for us as a league, and you know, one of the best sponsors obviously that comes in and is able to put our games out and able to televise. I mean, from the first year to where we are now, and just the number of games that come on TV. I mean, you have to look at that comparison and know, like, now, I mean, even this year, and even in Indiana, I mean, now that we've won a championship, now that we're on top, I mean, we've gotten more games, so we'll get more games this season that people will be able to watch. And I think that when you look at just the interest, and going back to what Ken was saying, too, you know, the interest that people have as far as the marketing goes, but also, too, when you follow college players or when you follow these players from high school to college, and now you're watching them, and then you have a vested interest in them. So when you look at a marketing standpoint, you know, somebody coming from Indiana, you look at George Hill, who comes from Indiana, Indiana product, coming back playing for the Indiana Pacers. I mean, you look at somebody like that, and all automatically it's a built-in market because of all the people that have been here that have seen him grow up. And I think that's another way that you see the explosive marketing campaign that's going out there.
What is the, you know, in the fact that it has changed also the way that people in my business approach sports. I mean, you know, when I first started in the business, your sports coverage was you would recount, you know, what happened at the game. You had to deliver an accurate box score. But, you know, the idea of talking about salary caps or how deals were structured or, you know, now, frankly, having to figure out how much public money goes into a facility like Lucas Oil Stadium, how has that changed the world of sports? I'll throw that one to Allison Millington because that's kind of the world you have to live in all the time.
Yeah. You know, the industry as a whole is constantly evolving. And I think as communities across the country started tracking sports and what sports could bring to their community, it became more and more obvious that this business is booming and it can bring a lot to the city and the state. And sort of figuring out that formula, figuring out how it works in your own community, I think is the magic of that. There's lots of cities across the country that have opened and closed sports commissions over the years for many different reasons, and we've been able to sustain it. But I think for our state in particular, we've made sports a lifestyle. And so we have made it part of what our community does. And yes, covering it in positions like yours have changed certainly over time. But as our community has continued to invest in sports, not just by attending games, but emotionally to support the Fever, to support the Pacers, to support the Colts, I think that we have stayed ahead of the curve on that, and it's been very important for us.
We are talking about the business of sports here in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question at WFYI via Facebook or Twitter. Well, in terms of the way it changes communities here, I mean, we've talked about how, I mean, Indianapolis has basically promoted itself for, what, the past three decades is the amateur sports capital of the world. We settled on that as our identity. Ken Unger, what ways has that reshaped this community?
Yeah, I think that's really important, John, because, and I'd even go back beyond 30 years. I think 30 years was the start of a very successful amateur sports capital strategy. But even before that, I think it goes all the way back to, say, 1909, when the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was built. Mm-hmm. And then in 1945, when Tony Holman Jr. saved the Speedway from the wrecking ball, I mean, a sports event, the Indy 500, really branded our community internationally. I've traveled all over the world, and, you know, you could tell anyone where you're from, and they'll know Indianapolis by that signature event. So if you go back, you know, now 100 years, we've been known as sports. The amateur sports capital of the world, that was an extremely successful strategy. It galvanized a community around one really potent strategy. It built facilities. It brought events to town. It made Allison's organization incredibly successful and an organization that around the country people envy the Indiana Sports Corp by the events that we bring to town, by the way we train volunteers, which is state of the art. We're known for that, and a brand is nothing more than a simple message about a product or a service, and the simple message about Indy is we know sports. And we've brought people to town who would never have come to Indy but for the fantastic sports events that we have. Another example is the Super Bowl in 2012. It exposed us to people all around the world. That is incalculable advertising value. It's a brand that sticks. So when the mayor and the governor and the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, when they're out recruiting businesses to come to bring jobs to Indiana, that carries with it that benefit.
Yeah, we are. And that's one of the things that I think we will be talking about in a little more, because there are obviously some debate about the public investment in sports, whether it generates the same sort of return. And obviously some neighborhood arts organizations would argue that the money could be spent in other ways. We are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Allison Melanchthon, who is the president of the Indiana Sports Corporation, Tamika Catchings, the Indiana Fever, and Ken Unger, who is the president of U.S. Sports Advisors. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to an encore presentation of No Limits. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. My guests are Allison Melanchthon, who is the president of the Indiana Sports Corporation, Tamika Catchings with the Indiana Fever, and Ken Unger, who is president of U.S. Sports Advisors. Well, let's talk a little bit about the economic benefits of investing in sports. You know, why is it we've committed to this identity as Ken argued that actually calling ourselves the amateur sports capital of the world might be a little limiting, mm-hmm. That we should go beyond on that. Why is it that we did that, and what are the benefits to the community for doing that, Allison?
Well, I think if you go back the number of years when the real push for the amateur sports part developed in Indianapolis, it was a group of civic leaders that were looking for sort of an identity for Indianapolis at the time. You know, lots of cities are known for lots of different things, and I think Indiana at the time was very neutral. There wasn't necessarily good
Indiana,
or bad about
Indiana,
it.
Indiana, no
yeah,
place.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but you did. Yeah, yeah, Indiana, no place.
Downtown, whatever, yeah.
And
yeah.
And I think in trying to sort of boost the downtown, boost the economy, and do, you know, what can we say Indiana is? What can we brand ourselves as? And the sports strategy, as Ken said, was a brilliant idea. And we had the right people in place at the right time to make a successful strategy. Over the years, it has brought a lot to our city. And I think our location, when they said, okay, we're going to do the sports strategy, the location of being in the center of the country was a huge benefit to that. So not just sports, but conventions started coming to Indianapolis. Businesses are moving and so forth. But I think the thing we're known for is sports. And that's what people are looking for. It was interesting after the Super Bowl, I got a lot of phone calls of people saying we had no idea that Indianapolis could be so great and so fun. And so, you know, over years, I think the opinion of Indianapolis and Indiana has changed, and we've been executing that through our sports.
We are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Tim, welcome to the program.
Yes, well, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
My mind is that the government, local government, and state government subsidizes sports so much with millions and millions of dollars at the cost of public safety, good public schools, libraries. How is subsidizing Jim Irsay or the Simons or any of this stuff promoting sports good for the city? I don't agree that it is. I think it's a really bad direction that we've taken.
Well, thank you for the question, Tim. We'll try to get an answer for you. I will throw that to Ken Unger.
Sure. I think, you know, the caller makes a great point. I mean, all this needs to be part of a balanced public policy, because no one will doubt the importance of all of those things, public safety, education. They're all things that governments need to do. Governments also need to create a climate for investment and a climate to create jobs, because sports creates jobs like many other industries, and creates some very good jobs. I mean, for example, Purdue University and IUPUI recently did a study with the Indiana Motorsports Association. The average motorsports job, as people working in the motorsports industry in Indiana, makes $63,000 a year. That's a great average salary, and it's good for our community, and these are people who pay taxes and support those things that we need, like public safety and education. So a sports investment policy needs to be balanced. It needs to not be crazy money spent on sports or spent on investments, but sound public investments in our future as an economy.
Well, and go, Allison Moyne.
Hey, let me add just one thing to the caller's question. For the Super Bowl, we raised about $20.5 million to run the Super Bowl, and it was all private, 100% of it. So I think lumping it all together is hard because it's different for each of the franchises. It's different for what we bring to the city. But I do know certainly for Super Bowl, that was all private money.
Well, to cut through this, I think the argument in terms of investing in sports is that what happens is that for the public revenues, they do create new investment opportunities, as Ken said, and new businesses that therefore generate more revenue, much of which comes from out of state or outside mm-hmm. the community. The question, I presume, then, for Tim would be, are there studies out there that actually show that is the case, that there are, you know, a $2 or $3 to $1 return on what gets invested? Allison Melanchthon, are there studies like that out there, and what do they show?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the franchises, but for our business at the Sports Corp and the Super Bowl, yes, we know the dollars that return to the state, to the city, and so forth. We do those studies. They help provide economic impact data for us next time we go bid on something else. If we had it before or had an event similar, we use that data. So certainly the state and the city received a lot of taxes through the Super Bowl project without putting a lot of money in. So, you know, in those cases, I think that it's well worth the investment.
We also mentioned earlier that we were talking about the importance of Title IX. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, is it safe to say that there still is a fair amount of gender inequality in that? I'm going to toss this to Tamika. My guess is if you were playing for the Pacers as opposed to the Fever, you'd be making a little bit more money.
Yeah, but, you know, I also look at it, going back to what I said, just the opportunity. And my father played in the NBA, so the salary he made when he played is a lot different than the salary mm-hmm. the guys make now. And so I'm hoping that, you know, what I'm doing is setting the stage for the young ladies that are coming after me. I'm not going to be playing for 30, 40, 50 years down the road, but I hope that if I have a daughter, she'll have the opportunity to play in the WNBA. So while there is inequality as far as the pay goes right now, I'm hoping that when we're celebrating our 50th year as a WNBA standing, the only female league still standing strong, that those young ladies will be making a lot more money than I'm making.
We are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Tamika, what's the hardest thing about being a professional athlete?
I'm going to honestly say there's not really anything for me. I mean, I feel like I have had great role models that have come before me. My mom and dad were very instrumental in my life and in helping me become the person that I am today. And so getting up to this level and being a professional athlete, really, I don't feel like I live my life any different than I would if I was something else. And I went, you know, to college and got a sport management degree, went back and got my master's in sports studies, and my ultimate goal when I'm done playing is to be a general manager for a team. So I still have a lot of things that I want to do, and I feel like being on the stage that I'm on right now and being a professional athlete, I'm able to mentor and I'm able to teach a lot of these young ladies and young boys how to carry themselves, how to represent, how to be respected, how to respect. A lot of things that just being on a team sport, you're able to learn. And I hope that with what I'm doing and the things that I'm able to create, even in the community with my Catch the Stars Foundation, that I'm able to help these young, you know, these young boys and girls grow up and know how to handle it when they have success in their life.
I'd like to continue on that. I mean, this seems like something that wouldn't have been possible, say, 50 years ago. For you, I mean, you're planning an entire career in sports here, not just doing the you know, your playing career, but continuing on and to retirement. Careers like that, particularly for women, wouldn't have been possible, you know, even 20 years ago,
yeah,
most likely.
And I mean, going back to what Allison said just about Title IX and just the impact that it made on so many women's lives. And I mean, I had the opportunity yesterday, I went to the White House and I got to be on a panel with some amazing ladies that have accomplished so many, I kind of felt a little like, oh, what am I doing? But, you know, just kind of Sunny, one lady was an astronaut, and then Dolores was a female activist, and then Alex has her own show. So, and then Abby was the CEO of A&E Networks. I mean, these are all ladies doing huge things, and not just with sport. So this is across the board, and I think that's really cool. I mean, I do a lot of events where we're talking about sports and we're talking about the impact that sports has had on our lives as females. But to be on a panel and talk about, I mean, a female activist that's been going for 50 years and the things that she's had to fight through, and having a CEO of A&E Networks, I mean, I'm like looking at this lady like that is really cool. But just to hear them talk about the struggles that they had growing up, and I think about my struggles, while they're a lot different, I still had the WNBA, I still had the NBA to kind of look forward to, and being able to play professional sports even overseas, now having the opportunity to play here in America in front of my family and friends.
We are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I'll get right to the point. I've always had a pretty big problem with professional sports and the taxation of the public at large to subsidize it, as did your previous caller have the same opinion. I live in Shelby County because I prefer to live away from Indianapolis, but we still get taxed for the new stadium. Out in Shelby County, every time we buy a hamburger or chicken wings from Walmart. So, and, you know, the money seems to flow one direction, and that's toward these sports teams, owners, you know, your Ursays and Simons and so forth, to the point where we were actually forced to, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we paid a $48 million penalty to the Colts because we built them their new stadium 1 year too early. So, yeah, I've got a real problem with professional sports, and, you know, there's a reason they say that they play for a team. It's because they don't really have jobs. They play. They don't work.
Thank you very much for the call and the question, Dave. We'll try to get a response for you. Well, I'll start for the sec. You know, Tamika, I'm going to take this one back to you. As the professional athlete here, do you play for a living or do you work for a living?
I love what I do, and for whatever profession that I would be in, whether it is being an athlete and being out on the floor or being in the front office or being an owner, whatever the case, I would hope that no matter what I'm doing, that I love my job. And so, you know, looking at a professional athlete, just like any other profession, you work hard. I mean, we work really hard. People see what we do when we get on the court. But I've been working out since about 7:30 this morning, and I just got done, and I'm in off season. And I'll come, you know, I'm here, and then I'll probably do something later on just to keep my workout, just to prepare for a season that doesn't start until May 4th. And so I understand the frustrations. I understand the fact that, you know, kind of going back to what Ken, being able to have that base of being able to allocate the funds in certain directions, however that happens. But I'm not here. I didn't go to school studying politics. I didn't go to school to study where money is, or, you know, I have my, what I want to do is play, be a professional athlete. And so I feel like I've done my due as far as working hard, as far as putting the time in the gym, as far as what I do in the community and giving back. So I don't feel like I have to answer to anybody as far as what, you know, why you're paying me the money that you pay me. Because if you're a president, or you're a CEO, or you're a radio, or you work, no matter where you work, you want to get paid for what you do. Mm-hmm. Now, the dollars, I mean, I don't have control over that. So I can't sit here and say, well, I'm worth this much or that much, but I feel like I've worked hard and I've done what I've needed to do since I was in seventh grade to be in this situation.
Well, I'll throw this one to Ken Unger. Why are athletes paid as much as they are professional athletes?
I think it's a question of supply and demand, mm-hmm. and they get paid what they get paid because there's a demand for high-quality professional athletes playing sports that people love, playing sports that businesses want to be involved with. And there's a lot of competition. Again, sports is about winning. So you know, the best athletes will make the highest, will earn the highest salaries. And it's the same in our general economy as it is in the sports economy. And I think it finds its own level. And athletes get paid a lot of money, and that's fine. They earn it. And so I have a lot of respect for that.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Natavia, who asks, "What? This is for Tamika. What advice would you give to aspiring sports journalists?" I'm guessing that we have an aspiring sports journalist.
Yeah, that's
there.
Nice. I think the best thing is just being able to find somebody that you can kind of follow. And I mean, there's a lot of radio stations out here. There's a lot of newspaper stations. I mean, just find somebody that's willing to take you in. And of course, I mean, it's in the colleges, it's in schools. Being able to do your high school newspaper edition, being able to do that, follow the sports teams on that. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can do. I think just the best thing to do is find somebody that you can follow, somebody that can mentor you and that you admire, that can kind of help set you up to where you want to be.
And Allison or Ken, I'm going to toss this. Sports have always been an American obsession. In some ways, in listening to this conversation, it strikes me that the business infrastructure took a long time to catch up with that fact, that there was like a 7,500-year delay before we realized the potential there. Ken, you're laughing, but...
Eventually we catch on.
Yes, yeah.
No, it's true. I think, and I think it's again the advent of the large stadium. I mean, and really, you mentioned ESPN, and all of a sudden, you know, when ESPN was started, and the first statement was, "How on earth could you possibly have a 24-hour sports station? How can you find the content to do that?" And then came Fox Sports. And then NBC Sports, and then ESPN2, and and you know, the explosion.
Has ESPN hit triple digits yet? Mm-hmm. Or is that...
It's only a matter of time, yeah. Right? But and so you have this desire for sports that really, once the technology of broadcast television, really cable television, and then satellite, the internet, and then the advent of the large stadium, and then a lot of large stadiums, there was this need for a lot of sports content. So you had this infrastructure that needed to be created to deliver what the public was demanding, and that's sports entertainment.
We're talking about the business of sports. I'm John Krall. Please stay with us. I'm John Krall. You're listening to an encore presentation of No Limits. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. My guests are Allison Melancton, who is the president of the Indiana Sports Corporation, Tamika Catchings with the Indiana Fever, and Ken Unger, who is the president of U.S. Sports Advisors. It's a marketing firm. Again, we are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks very much.
Certainly.
Tamika, you've had some what I would consider unfair questions that you've handled with grace as you have done your career. My question is, how do you imagine your world and the path you've had would be different if you were male? What special things does being female have?
How do
Good
I
question.
Imagine?
Thank you very much, Jim.
I ask myself that every day when I'm in the gym working out. No, I think really the same. I mean, I would hope that I still have the opportunity to be a professional athlete and to follow in my dreams of being one in the NBA at that point. And I mean, I think I'd still be in the same situation as far as, I don't know if I'd be in Indiana, so I'm glad to be in Indiana and be a Fever player, but probably making more money. And with all of the things that thank God I've been able to accomplish, just kind of with that supply and demand, probably making a whole lot more than I'm making, but you know, I'm blessed to be where I'm at right now and have the opportunity to be in Indiana, a city that growing up I knew nothing about. But after being here, I'm going into my 13th season this year. It's just been a blessing to be able to be in the community and have so many great people that are around me and a community that supports us like they do.
Because you've been in the, you know, the professional sports world pretty much since birth, before the WNBA came along, I mean, the task before you would have been much harder, trying to make it to the NBA if it would have been possible. Even, what did your parents and your coaches when you were younger say about your dream to be a professional athlete? I mean, how did they guide you?
They were both very supportive. And my father especially, soccer was actually my first sport, soccer, and then we started playing softball and then got into basketball, organized basketball. So it kind of took a path. It wasn't like right when I started playing basketball was my first sport and it was the only sport I played. We did that. We did gymnastics. We did track and field, volleyball. So we did a lot of different sports. But seventh grade, when I finally made the decision, like, this is what I really want to do, my dad was like, okay, you know, I'm going to help you. I'm not going to push you more than you want to be pushed. So you tell me, we'll go to the gym, we'll work out, but when you're ready to stop, we'll stop. And so he never really pressured me to play basketball. And I think even now when I look at a lot of these kids that are in the gym and I hear their parents and I'm going to these games, like, I'm amazed because my dad and my mom weren't like that. They were just kind of like, okay, if this is something you want to do, we'll do it. And, you know, we'll put you in whatever camp you want to go to, whatever clinics, whatever that case may be.
But you have to drive.
But I had the choice. Yeah, and I had a choice rather than somebody pushing me like a lot of parents do nowadays.
We are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Allison Millington, we've had a fair number of questions really about the amount of money that gets spent. And we've also talked, but not talked specifically, about the Super Bowl, the fact that we had perhaps the world's single biggest sporting event here in the city, about 14 months ago now, or 13 months ago. What was the impact of the Super Bowl in terms of you know, let's deal with it economically, culturally. What did it do for this city and this state?
Well, for numbers, the economic impact study showed that there was about $380 million that were economic impact to the community. The direct spend was $176 million, which is the largest direct spend of any event that has been in Indiana. As a matter of fact, if you combine the top four conventions that have been in Indianapolis in a single year, the single Super Bowl impact is more than those four conventions total. So I think money-wise, without question, it was a success. I think the Super Bowl did things for the community that that were, I guess, impactful is probably the best word, impactful. We did a great project on the near east side of Indianapolis in a neighborhood, invested $152 million in that area over 4 years. Built a community center on the campus of Arsenal Tech High School, the Chase Near East Side Yet Center, which has got a lot of great things for the community. Kids are being programmed there. There's after-school programs. There's before-school programs. There's a health club and so forth. So Super Bowl, we really focused on what we were going to leave here for a legacy, not just the four-hour football game. The four-hour football game is great for those people who love football, but there's a whole other part of it that we tried to really focus on. We had 26 different community programs, several of those which were statewide, impacted youth and education, and the environment and so forth. So while I think we use the excuse of the Super Bowl to do great things for the community, we didn't just say to the NFL, you know, what can we do for you? We wanted to make sure there was long-lasting legacies with the Super Bowl that really involved the community, and I think we accomplished that.
And, you know, we've had kind of this weird quirk of luck, too, in that, you know, the Super Bowl right before Indianapolis, Dallas really struggled to deal with the winter weather, the blizzard, and of course, the one in New Orleans, they had a hard time keeping the lights on. So, you know, how does something like that help Indianapolis's image or affect Indianapolis's image? The fact that we we by all accounts did execute the one we had flawlessly.
Yeah, I mean, we were blessed with that luck, but make no mistake about it. I mean, Allison and her staff did a spectacular job that few communities could do. We pulled it off with such flawless execution, and I think I've heard more stories about volunteers, about men and women who volunteered their time. They were, you know, CEOs of companies. They were, you know, people who worked jobs unrelated to sports, who took time out to be on the transportation committee, to greet visitors at the airport. And that those kind of interactions with visitors are invaluable, because it just says that we're a community that's worthy of the Super Bowl. And so we were blessed by great weather, but it was more than luck.
We are talking about the business of sports here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Chris, welcome to the program.
Yes. How are you doing today?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
I just want to make a quick comment. I want to say that in every way, when you think about it, from past when we, each and every one of us, was growing up, sports had an impact on each and every one of us' life, where we made it professionally or not. And same thing with our children. I think that a lot of times that we, when we look at the what's being spent on something, and looking at the impact it can have on the community, our cities, and whatever the state, it could grow far larger than what we foresee. Like when they started the Indiana Pacers way back when, and how the impact it had on the city as well. So that being said, you know, and then looking...
Yeah, we tend to forget we had to do a telethon at one point to try to keep the Pacers in town.
Yes, I know. But at one time, you know, just like, you know, even in Indiana Sports Corporation, was involved in a mentoring program, I never forget when they gave, you know, like 25 tickets, you know, for, you know, to help some, you know, young guys, young kids and stuff experience, you know, the time to go to a game at one time they more than likely weren't not able to go. So, you know, I just think that a lot of times, just like when you're looking at it from a business standpoint, a lot of times what you do is it's kind of like you have, it's like that saying, I'm pretty sure you said, you build it and they will come. You know, so that's the same thing even when it comes to this soccer team that they're going to have. You know, who knows? It's starting out at IUPUI, but who knows where that's going to take, you know, another big sporting event. So that's the only comment I want to make. And
great.
If anybody wants to expound on it, we're welcome to do so.
Great. Thank you for the call, Chris. Well, and is that, at times, Allison, do you get frustrated in having this conversation also just about the numbers and the economics when I think Chris's overall point here mm-hmm. is that sports are about a lot more than that.
Yeah, and, you know, the Sports Corporation does so much in the community that we don't probably toot our horn as much as we should. We have a program called Geared for Health where we collect used and new sporting equipment distributed across the state to organizations and after-school programs and Boys and Girls Clubs, so we can get kids out of their chairs and moving and really help contribute to the solution of youth obesity. We do every event we do. We have lots of clinics. We have an upcoming lacrosse event for the first time in the stadium, and we're going to run 2,000 kids through a clinic there. So with the events come other great benefits and other great role models. Tamika has been an unbelievable role model for youth in this community for many years, and she will continue to be. And so she doesn't just get out on the court and play and not give back to the community. She does, and we try to do that as well.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener, and you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter here at No Limits by going through Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. This is from a listener named Brittany who says, I have a question for Tamika. Has anyone ever told you you couldn't do what you do now because of your disability?
Yeah, I mean...
And probably that explain what your disability
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I was born with a hearing problem, a speech problem, had to wear hearing aids, glasses, braces, the whole nine yards growing up. I was a little girl with pigtails just trying to fit in. And really that's how sports became so important to me, and probably why... No, not probably. It was one of the main reasons why I play the way I do with so much passion and why I love to play the game of basketball, just because growing up, I always got made fun of, and I was always The one that was walking home crying just from a hard day at school. And so when people started making fun of me and I got better and better in sports, it was like, okay, you might be able to make fun of me out here, but let's go play basketball. Let's go play tennis or whatever sport. I was just that competitive. So, I mean, I've had a lot of people, and I'm sure even people now like that probably knew me when I was really, really young and look at me now, you know, a lot of people probably remember those days. And, you know, I think that I don't look at it as a disability. I look at it as something that, I mean, God made every person the way that he made us. And so I really look at it as an opportunity to use what may be a disability for so many, to use it and say, hey, you know what, if you have a hearing problem, if you have a speech problem, if you have to wear glasses or wear contacts, you know, braces, whatever the case may be, you can still make it to this level by working hard.
Do you embrace, I mean, I'm probably going to date myself here, but but I remember there was an ad campaign years ago from Charles Barkley where he announced, you know, I am not a role model. Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself as a role model?
Definitely.
I mean, do you accept that leadership?
Definitely, and every athlete should see themselves. I mean, when you look at all the money that's put into athletics, and especially when you get to the professional level, you automatically become one, because whether you like it or not, there are young boys and girls that are watching you and watching every single move you make and every single word you say and what you got on and what music you, I mean, after the games you pull up, there's a whole group of people waiting for autographs. The music that I pull up and that I'm listening to, those kids that are standing right there are listening. Oh, I like that song. Oh, okay. Okay, that's what you listen. So no matter what, I mean, they're always watching you. And so when you kind of put yourself out there, I'm not a role model. I mean, we do what we do because we love to do it. Like, I love to play basketball, but at the same time, I'm very conscious that every single thing that I do, people are watching, and especially, I mean, I have little nephews and I have a niece, and I want them when they grow up to remember these times and to know what's right and what's wrong.
Do you get tired of, I mean, there's a part of me that in listening to that thinks, boy, that would be exhausting to know that, you know, you look in the refrigerator and, you know, you're out of milk or whatever, and you got to run to the store and think, oh man, everybody's going to know who I am. I can't just throw on a pair of sweats and go.
No, I do.
You do?
I do. I think I'm very
transparent.
You know, I don't want to be put on a pedestal like that, because I want these kids to realize that the ones that go up and that put themselves on a pedestal, those are the ones that fall the hardest. And when they come down, the same people you pass going on the way up are the same people you pass going on the way down. So I think it's very important that whoever you talk to, you know, we talked about this last night. I mean, the janitors, the people that have to do all the dirty work, the people that are after our game having to pack up the court and put the Indiana ice rink out there. I mean, those people, I try to speak to everybody, because one day when they're done and when another guy talked about his experience with Indiana Sports Corp, it's the same thing. Thank God he had a positive experience. So when he calls in, he's able to talk about it in a positive way. And I hope that as a professional athlete, that when these young ladies and young men walk away, that they'll have a lasting impression of what a positive female role model is like.
Ken Unger, do we do enough to, I mean, you know, we see now people skyrocketing both to, you know, tremendous fame and also having, tremendous amounts of money flowing into their hands when they're 18 or 19 years old. I think I'm a reasonably stable person, but I'm not sure all the decisions I would have made if that circumstances had hit me at that age would have been good ones. Do we do enough to prepare them for the kinds of responsibilities that Tamika's talking about?
We really don't. I mean, I look at Tamika. She's a spectacular role model. And I wish we did enough for young athletes coming up to prepare them for that, to, you know, help them understand that. So, for example, our company has worked with the NBA Players Association on their Top 100 camp, which is specifically a way to prepare the top 100 high school players in the country for the challenges that they're going to face off the court, for the most part. Now, there's on-the-court training at this camp. But off the court, to prepare them for the myriad of pressures that they're going to face if they're lucky enough to play in the NBA. So that's just one program. There should be many others. There are 53 million youth athletes. Now, a small percentage of those will play pro, But I don't think we really do enough to prepare those who are going into the pro ranks for the pressures, for all the various things they're going to face when they turn pro. It just happens that Tamika turned out spectacularly.
Well, and I have enjoyed this conversation. I want to thank my guests for what has been a fascinating conversation. I've really enjoyed talking with Alison Melanchthon. It's good to have you in the studio for once. Yeah, thank you for joining us, Alison. Tamika Catchings, it is a genuine pleasure, and congratulations on being the champs. It's wonderful to have one here in the city.
Thank you.
It's good. And Ken Unger, president of U.S. Sports Advisors, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.